metaphysics, and all things spiritual. In short, we'll examine the truth. And when we find things that aren't right, we'll offer creative solutions. And now, the host of Evidence Footprints, Don Nikoloff. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com. I'm your host, Don Nikoloff, and I'll be with you for the next hour on this September the 27th on the West Coast, now September the 28th, 2010 on the East Coast and in the Central Time Zone. Well, there's a lot of news out there. Word has it that the illustrious Rahm Emanuel is going to leave his White House staff position so that he can begin campaigning for the position of mayor of the city of Chicago. Any surprise there? I guess that would be the perfect Washington to Chicago conduit they need to continue their financial corruption, but rather than dwell on that, because that's all up in the air, I pulled a clip of a news item that comes from Wellesley, Massachusetts, and this pretty much will speak for itself. You've got this diversion going on in New York City near Ground Zero regarding the building of a mosque, despite the fact that the government wants to tell us that Muslims, box cutter wielding Muslims, performed the mass murder of 9/11. And in spite of that, they want to go ahead and build a mosque on Ground Zero. It's insane that anyone would even propose that in light of the charge that was made way back in 2001, let alone has been carried out over and over and over now for the past 9 years plus. And that said, there seems to be an agenda, especially with the usurper in office, to push the Muslim faith upon the American people in an effort to wipe out Christianity. I'll let you decide for yourself after you listen to this clip.
On May 25th, 2010, students from the Wellesley, Massachusetts Public Middle School were taken on a field trip to the Muslim American Society's Boston Mosque. During their visit, students were asked to participate in the Muslim midday prayer. Several Wellesley Public School boys took part. How did Wellesley Public School teachers allow this to happen? A mother who joined the field trip describes her experience.
My 11-year-old son is a student at Wellesley Middle School. In mid-May, the school sent a permission request for him to participate in a social studies class field trip to a mosque. I was told that the goal of the trip was to learn about the mosque's architecture and to give the students an authentic experience inside a mosque by observing Islamic religion firsthand. Something didn't feel quite right about public school kids being taken to have an authentic experience in a place of worship. I was a little concerned. As I did a bit of research into the mosque, known as the Islamic Society of Boston Cultural Center, as well as the organization that runs it, the Muslim American Society, I discovered, to my alarm, that the mosque is highly controversial.
The Fox Undercover investigation has documented that several of its leaders, past and present, do have ties to Islamic terrorism.
The mosque was founded by Abdulrahman Al-Amudi, who is currently serving 23 years in prison for his participation in an Al-Qaeda terror plot. The Muslim American Society, which runs the mosque, has been identified by federal prosecutors as the overt arm of the Muslim Brotherhood. The top donor to the mosque, and one of its legal owners in trust, is wealthy Saudi national Walid Fatahi, who has written in Arabic newspapers that Jews were always after killing the prophets. Alarmingly, This anti-Semitic message appears to be reaching some of the mosque's own youth.
The Jews assassinated the prophet?
They tried to.
They did.
Anytime.
Recently, one of the mosque's imams was taped appearing to incite his followers.
Grab onto the shovel, grab onto the gun and the sword. Don't be afraid to step out into this world and do your job.
I also learned that the Islamic Society had promoted wife beating on its website, instructing men to hang a whip in the household as a warning for unruly wives. I was concerned and decided to join the field trip as a chaperone, and I brought my camera. As soon as I walked into the mosque, I was approached by a white female American convert who was to be my escort. The event seemed well orchestrated, like a sales pitch. Everyone was very friendly.
I said to believe in Allah, and Allah is the one God, the only one worthy of worship, all forgiving, all merciful, wise, knowing. Everything we do is to please God and because God has guided us to do those things.
The substance of the mosque presentation to students was troubling. It really didn't seem very educational. The Islamic Center spokeswoman was presenting distorted history and sometimes came close to proselytizing.
At the time of the Prophet Muhammad, women were allowed to express their opinions and vote in the matter. And in this country, women didn't gain that right until less than 100 years ago. So Islam actually was very advanced in terms of recognizing women's rights.
The claim that women were allowed to vote in Muhammad's 7th century Arabia is simply not true. Muhammad was a supreme ruler who claimed divine sanction from Allah. No one, not even men, were allowed to vote. And in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia today, both men and women have few political rights. In fact, women still aren't even allowed to drive cars there. Yet it's not surprising that the mosque would seek to minimize the abuse of Saudi women. Over half of the mosque's $15 million price tag was paid by donors living in Saudi Arabia.
I was wondering how many school children had been told that women were freer under Muhammad than under George Washington or Theodore Roosevelt. This educating the students about Islamic history was one thing, but what the mosque tour guides did next was totally inappropriate and shocking. The spokeswoman announced that it was almost prayer time, and taught the kids how to say the daily prayer.
In the name of God, the most gracious, most merciful, Alhamdulillah, of the Alameen, all praise is due to the ruler of all worlds.
All the women chaperones, female teachers, and girls were asked to leave the prayer area, but the boys were asked to stay. Because we were sitting far away, I didn't notice it at first, but I was shocked to look up and see some of the middle school boys praying with the men at the mosque, following the movements of the faithful, prostrating themselves with their foreheads on the ground.
Allah. Allah.
Apparently, while we weren't looking, the boys were asked to join in the prayer, and some of them did. I was shaking as I saw one of the Jewish boys praying. I looked at the teachers to do something, to say something. No one said anything, perhaps afraid to offend. I wanted to get out quickly and go home. After the field trip, I checked the permission slip. There was nothing there to inform parents that their children would be joining in prayer, only that they would be observing.
According to the school's social studies chair, the trip was recommended by a Watertown-based nonprofit called Primary Source. According to the group's website, it partners with 50 schools and districts across Massachusetts and has held events with mosque leaders before.
How many public school students have visited the Roxbury Mosque or other mosques and been offered to join the prayer?
In fact, all across the country, there are reports of radical Islamic groups engaging in dawah, which literally means proselytizing for Islam, by taking advantage of poorly considered social studies curricula. One such dawah organization, DawahNet, even offers a helpful guide for proselytizing in public schools, noting that students are receptive to new ideas. According to the website, public schools are therefore fertile grounds where the seeds of Islam can be sowed inside the hearts of non-Muslim students. In fact, the Boston Mosque's top donor and trustee, Waleed Fatahi, actually boasted about the increase of proselytizing opportunities in Boston. Father Raymond Helmick, a Jesuit priest and Boston College professor, is one of the Islamic Center's most fervent supporters, but even he has condemned Fatahi's proselytizing efforts.
Fatahi wrote an article for the Ashaq newspaper that comes out of London, Arabic newspaper. It was picking up on the fact that subsequent to 9/11, people began to take a much greater interest in Islam, trying to understand more what is Islam about. And he took this as a positive sign and said that this put them in the position to start making converts. His ideas about this is a chance to proselytize, this was pretty offensive.
The whole notion of having a religious practice as part of a school field trip concerns me. How can we entrust our children to a school system that appears to act so irresponsibly?
Historically, the ACLU has been at the forefront of the battle to keep religion out of public schools. In fact, in 2009, the ACLU in Minnesota sued a charter school run by Muslim American Society officials for promoting prayer at the school. The ACLU's New England Education Director, Nancy Murray, shown here taking part in a public event at the mosque, is a strong supporter of the Muslim American Society. Nevertheless, we would normally expect the ACLU to take the lead in investigating any promotion of prayer or proselytizing to Massachusetts public school students. Public officials, including Wellesley Middle School's principal Joshua Frank, Wellesley School Superintendent Bella Wong, and chair of the Wellesley Board of Selectmen, Catherine Babson, need to investigate this incident, hold those responsible accountable, and ensure that it will never happen again. Moreover, the role of primary source in influencing the educational curriculum in Massachusetts public schools must also be investigated. Our institutions are failing us. Our public schools must not allow the Muslim American Society to proselytize to our public school students.
Well, that clip is courtesy of patriotupdate.com, and you're urged at the end of, it's actually a video, but the audio was extremely good, to contact at www.peaceandtolerance.org if your children are being proselytized in Muslim mosques during school hours. This is absolute insanity that they would, what comes to mind is a case in California. One man, they say one man, approached the ACLU to represent the removal of prayer and any reference to God in the California schools. And he won this case. When are we going to wake up and take back our country and our religion, for that matter? Those of you who are Christians, or regardless of what religion you are, I'm not anti-religion here, but what seems fair is if you remove one religion from the schools, especially the one upon which this country was founded, and I'm speaking about America, then you must remove all religions. This is absolute insanity. But it shows what happens when you have a usurper in office. With that, I would like to welcome tonight our regular Monday night guest. He hosts his own radio show on the Micro Effect. The show was called The Story Behind the Story, Naturopath and PhD, Dr. A. True Ott. Dr. Ott, welcome to the show.
Well, thanks, Don. It's a pleasure again to be with you tonight, and thank you for that clip. I don't know if you heard one of my broadcasts. I think it was with Drew Malone Raines. We went into this for the first hour in depth. The so-called mosque at Ground Zero, ladies and gentlemen, is best described as a super mosque. I mean, it's one of the, I think it's the third largest mosque in the world that's being planned. And the name of this mosque, Don, is significant. They're calling it, at least they were, they've kind of toned this down a little bit now, they're calling it the Cordoba House. Now, if you understand the Islamic history, you know that Cordoba is the iconic victory of the Islamic faith over Christianity in Europe. That's they hold that up as their greatest victory over Christianity. So, yeah, that's interesting. When you, and also when you look at the fact, as the video just made a touch, just hint of it, where is the money coming for these, this multi-million dollar mosque with all the new niceties? Well, I don't believe it's all coming from wealthy Arabs in Saudi Arabia. I am convinced that much of it's coming from, believe it or not, wealthy Wall Street Jews. And I say that because I played the clip of I'm sure I remember his name. He's the chief rabbi there in Manhattan. I think it's Feinberg or something like that. But anyway, he held a dedicatory candlelight vigil where he actually said a prayer to the Jewish God to bless the work of the imams and the, you know, the Muslim faith there at that site. And it was a stunning dedicatory prayer for unity, for basically all religions coming together in a new order. Okay, so I really think there's so much behind the story on that one. We need to get a full disclosure of who's funding the darn thing. Again, always seems to be true to follow the money, and you'd be surprised.
Yeah, you wonder who's what politicians are being paid off to allow this to occur. How does one arrange this?
Well, again, like you said, we know if anybody is wide awake, we know that Islam and, you know, the nations of Middle East that are largely Islamic are the scapegoats for the false flag and, you know, 9/11 thing. It was not Islamic terrorists. It was not Islamic extremists. No, it was inside. Very, very likely, the preponderance of evidence is strong that it was Israelis behind all of this. Again, to frame up an Islamic group to, you know, flame the passions of the people. And that, again, this is an extension of that, that you put the funding in place for an Islamic super mosque and name it the Cordoba House after the Spanish city of Cordoba that was the epicenter of the Muslim extensions and victories over Christianity, so-called. There's much more to this than meets the eye when you dig deep into it.
Mm-hmm. I also, you'd have to see the video to see the subtitles. The commentary by the Catholic priest was a Jesuit priest from Boston College.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you get the powers that be that control the religious media as well involved in these pieces. But the piece is really intended to expose what's happening in the public schools.
Well, what if the Talmudic Khazarian Jews are really worshiping the same God, Al, or El, Baal, Allah, Baalah. It goes back again to the halls of Babylon, where you see the outgrowths. Now, yeah, the prophet Muhammad was supposed to have ascended into heaven supernaturally, was supposed to have brought the world this new edition of Holy Writ called the Quran, and the names involved, Allah is good, Allah is great, going back to the same chants as the, you know, the rabbis that worship Al or Elohim, Allah, you know, it's so close.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it goes back to who is their God. It's not Jesus Christ, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And if not Jesus Christ, then who? Well, look at these symbols, so the symbols of Islam, the quarter moon, okay, the waning moon. The ancient symbol of Babylon has to do with the goddess Ashtoreth, which is her symbol of being in the moon that way. The parallels to me are amazing, and you know, as are the similarities, by the way, with Islam and Mormonism. I think it's exactly the same false religion and prophets. You've got newspapers in the 1840s in Illinois, around the, you know, the neighborhood of Nauvoo, the Quincy Whig, the Quincy newspapers, for instance. Joseph Smith, by his own admission, fancied himself and even publicly said he was the modern Western version of Muhammad. He was the new Muhammad. The parallels are amazing. The super charismatic, almost to the point of hypnotic draw. Both had a somewhat strange ending to their lives. While Joseph Smith didn't ascend to heaven on a rock, he was shot and killed at a town called Carthage in a jail on the rock. And it seems to galvanize people, as, you know, the martyrdom seems to galvanize them into some sort of superiority complex. You have of course, the introduction of a new book of scripture, the Book of Mormon, and of course, you know, the Quran. The similarities are just amazing. Even to the schisms, the Shiite and Sunni schisms, that are constantly, you know, fighting for supremacy, have the same earmarks as the schism in Mormonism. It's just almost amazingly coincidental. You have the reorganized LDS church, and then you have the mainstream LDS church. Well, just like Shiite and Sunni, the reorganized church claims direct lineage of authority from Joseph Smith to his sons, and the other is just following Brigham Young as a new authority figure. Well, that's exactly the background of the two primary Islamic traditions of Shiite and Sunni.
Yes. Now in this clip, I want to point out the fact, no one really mentioned this in the clip itself or pertaining to what transpired. But you had this woman who is indoctrinating the children in the history of Islam. And she makes a statement that the women under Muhammad were permitted to vote. Well, we know that that's not true. They're not even allowed to drive, even today. And then you have this dichotomy that she politicizes the statement by saying that under the religion of Islam, women could vote. They were permitted to vote, and women here in America were not given the right to vote until about 100 years ago. I think it was, 1920 was the year of suffrage. But That's a political statement, and she's making a religious statement. So she's politicizing the religion, the Muslim religion, and trying to politicize a political decision, or trying to religiousize, if that's the correct word, to make a religious issue of it, in other words. It had nothing to do with Christianity, whether women voted or not. Then to me, it's rather insane. But you were dealing with a male-dominated world, and their plan was to get women into the tax base. So the first thing was to get them to vote, then get them to work, then get them to pay taxes. And through that dividing of the parental responsibilities, or by dividing the parents so that both parents were forced to work in a failing economy, you would then leave the children to the state, which is exactly what has occurred. So she didn't tell the truth. They didn't point that out. It's not to fault them, but it's worth paying attention to that, because a political decision or a legal a law that prohibited women from voting had nothing to do with whether they were Christians or Jews or Muslims or any other religion you want to name.
Well, just because women as a block have the right to vote on does not mean that they are not oppressed, okay, that they're really truly free. Case in point is early Mormon history again in Utah. In the 1850s and 1860s, under the iron fist of Brigham Young. Here, polygamy ruled the day. Brigham Young had 50-plus wives. The other church leaders had not quite that many, but they were in the teens and sometimes 20s. Yet, if you look at the modern Mormon propaganda, oh, you have all of these this truth that women in Utah were granted voting rights before anybody else. They were granted voting rights very early, well before Susan B. Anthony and the suffrage movement nationwide in America. So does that mean that the women in Utah, just because they got to take a break from their kitchens and their whatever domestic duties they performed, went in and marked a ballot, does that make them free? Heavens no. Not many more groups of women worldwide, Islamic or otherwise, have been as oppressed as women under, the yoke of polygamy.
Mm-hmm. And I also find it hypocritical that they allowed this woman to preach to the kids in the mosque, but the girls had to leave when it came time to pray.
Oh, yeah.
Again, yep. We have contradictions staring you in the face, right in the face. Yet they remarked about it, but I find that rather interesting. So it was for psychological indoctrination. They could get the kids to trust the woman to deliver that message rather than a man.
Mm-hmm. And also looking at their prayers. Of course, you got to have a compass, and the mosques are laid out in a marking the cardinal points of the compass. But all prayers are to face towards Mecca, which is basically always to the east. And again, what parallels that is, the Freemasons, where they worship the quote great architect of the universe. All their lodge altars are oriented directly to the east. So just like the Muslims who worship their God in the east, so do the Freemasons and Mormons in their temples. The altars are in their endowment rooms are always positioned to the east.
Yes. East symbolizing wisdom.
East rhymes with beast. Yes. It really is the satanic origins. I mean, Freemasonry, the writer, one of the earliest writers of Freemasonry, one Albert Pike, in his book Morals and Dogma, tells the world who the architect of the universe of Freemasonry. It's literally Lucifer, the light bearer. It calls him the light bearer because he brings first light to the earth. So by their own admission, it's a Luciferian image or Luciferian effigy that they do worship, the god of the east. And so ditto with the Mormons.
Mm-hmm. Well, not that we plan to talk about anything specific. One reason I wanted to play this clip is just to bring this to people's attention, that this is going on in the schools and people should be looking after their children to see if this is going on elsewhere. I find it interesting that it went on in Wellesley, Massachusetts,
yeah,
of all
places. I chuckled when I heard that.
Reminds you of someone else in politics, doesn't it?
Oh, yes, it does. The Sisters of Wellesley College. I mean, they're talking about who's who of the witchcraft elite.
Mm-hmm.
There you go. I need to mention, last week an article, Don, was here in our Utah newspapers. Some kind of nationwide poll was taken on the GOP frontrunners. You would think that the most visible would be Sarah Palin. She's really positioning herself, trying to worm her way into Ron Paul's Tea Party movement. And so, you know, she would appear to be the most active, yet 25% of those GOP voting households that were polled said they, you know, their favorite was Mitt Romney, with only 10 or 15% going to Palin. And he's virtually, you know, not been visible in any way, not nearly to the point where Sarah Palin is. I find that to be quite interesting.
Yeah, I keep saying we need to clean house completely. Don't sweep the dirt under the rug and pretend like it's not there. You know, the Republican Party has tried to lay claim to the Tea Party movement. And whether anybody in the Tea Party is Republican or Democratic or independent, libertarian, whatever label you want to put on it, it's we've got a clean house, period. And that message has to sink in. Unfortunately, people keep looking for some kind of idol. You know, what has Sarah Palin ever done?
Well, she's good, very, very close friends with Henry Kissinger, of course.
But what has she done? What has Henry done but destroy this country?
Well, he controls people's minds. He's the handler.
Mm-hmm.
Don't you know that I am the smartest man in the world, Don?
Yes, you handled Bob Hope. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. You heard that story. The story goes, Kissinger was had boarded a private plane because he needed to get across country quickly. In the plane, it was a single engine jet. And there was a pastor, a reverend, along with a young hippie, you know, unshaven and quite long hair, and the pilot radios back and says, "I've got some very bad news. We've had a problem with our engine, and we're just basically gliding, and you've got 10 minutes before crash landing. I'm ejecting with my parachute. The bad news is we only have 2 passenger parachutes available." So you have to decide who's going to take the parachutes. Goodbye, and he ejects. Immediately, Kissinger stands up and he says, not everybody knows that I am the smartest and most intelligent man on this world. So I must have this. The world must have my brain. So he grabs a parachute, straps it on, and jumps out the plane. And with that, the pastor rises and he grabs the other parachute and he says to the young man, he says, young man, you have a whole life to live. I've lived a good 70 years. I'm ready to meet my maker, and I'm doing so with peace. You take this last parachute, use it well, and remember me, and live a good life. And the young hippie stands up. Hey, man, it's cool. That smartest man in the world just jumped out with my knapsack on. Too bad that wasn't really a true story. I mean, you're right. Talk about a war criminal. And the evidence is so strong that for, you know, Sarah Palin is his puppet on the string.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Well, we can go into that maybe on some other show.
Mm-hmm.
The past couple of weeks, we've been talking about things going on in space, things happening to the Earth. And this shakeup that's occurring right now in Washington, I call it a shakeup because normally somebody wouldn't leave a major staff position in the White House unless they pretty much figured they had most of the agenda in order and that it was time to move into Plan B and to facilitate cap and trade for after this election period. Do you think that might be why Rahm Emanuel may be planning on running for the mayor of Chicago?
Oh, yeah, I think there's definitely something in the works there. I don't know if it involves cap and trade. It very well could. Of course, the exchange, the cap and trade exchange is centered there in Chicago. And the infrastructure is such that Obama and his partners in crime are positioned to reap billions and billions of dollars. As is Al, I invented the internet, Gore.
Yeah. There's an interesting set of figures that came out from Professor Joseph Olson of Hamline University School of Law in St. Paul, Minnesota. And he pointed out some facts about the last presidential election. The number of states won by Obama, 19, McCain, 29. Square miles of land won by Obama, 580,000. McCain, 2,427,000. Population of counties won by Obama, 127 million. McCain, 143 million. I seriously doubt it was that close, but that's what he reported.
I didn't know there were 280 million votes cast, but go ahead.
Yeah, exactly. Well, he's describing the counties. Murder rate per 100,000 residents in counties won by McCain, 2.1. Obama, 13.2. And Professor Olson adds, in aggregate, the map of the territory McCain won was mostly the land owned by the tax-paying citizens of the country. Obama territory mostly encompassed those citizens living in low-income tenements and living off various forms of government welfare. He believes that the United States is now somewhere between the complacency and apathy phase of Professor Tyler's definition of democracy, with some 40% of the nation's population already having reached the governmental dependency phase. If Congress grants amnesty and citizenship to 20 million criminal invaders called illegals and they vote, then we can say goodbye to the USA in fewer than 5 years. Found that to be rather interesting.
Well, yeah, I almost submit that we already are there. America is not the same America of 15 years ago, Don. And at what point do we say it's already been subverted and make that declaration?
Yeah. Well, that brings us to another point, and I'm hoping in our remaining time that we can discuss this. This is an outside-the-box discussion. If you look at how everything that we experience in life is primarily orchestrated by a select group of people that run the show through the various mechanisms that we've talked about on so many other shows, whether it's the pharmaceutical industry controlling education by dumbing down the populace, starting with the children and doing this over generations, taking us into wars that do not have to occur except to satisfy their unquenchable thirst for power and more riches, and to witness the mass murder of millions of people, and claim all the while that it's leading us to peace. We're in quite a chaotic, dysfunctional state on this planet. And over the past weekend, I've been basically led to do a lot of self-searching and look at my relationship with the Creator and the creation and what I often refer to as the oath that I made before I came to this planet to live inside a body, which is not me, and to use a mind which is not me, but is available to me and anyone else, and really to expand or to glorify the creation by participating in it and adding to its cumulative experience. And I think that's to be a positive, constructive path and not one of destruction, and not one of pain and sorrow that seems to be, or fear for that matter. And I've been trying to, you know, over the last 9 months now on this show with the various guests, including you, we've been trying to enlighten people to what's going on so that people will look outside of themselves and see that no one's going to take care of you. You've got to become responsible enough to take care of yourself. And in so doing and learning how to do that consistently, to align yourself with higher truths and higher purposes, you raise the vibration of the whole universe. And the universe responds accordingly. And it's our ignorance of that. And I'm not preaching any religion here. It's a fact of how I see the creation. And I think many others do that have spent that time searching for those truths. We can end all of this insanity and this madness if we stop playing the games that are put before us. We're tempted with materialism. We're tempted with idolatry, as if that's something to pursue. And if you don't pursue it, then, you know, at least those that serve as idols for us give us some sick kind of hope that we can achieve idolatry ourselves, or that, you know, pursuing idolatry is a worthwhile cause. We seem to be doing everything but recognizing who we are. Your thoughts on that?
Oh, I think you're right on. It's a pattern of whatever you want to call it, Hegelian dialectic, keeping the controlled opposition working against each other. And in the meantime, these insignificant issues really in the global scale keep people in their finite, world views from ever grasping the infinite view of who they really are, and that this is all a setup, a stage, a play act done to basically keep them always, you know, working, lurking at false enemies, okay? And you see it with like I said, the first part of the show. The Islamic people as a whole are just them. They're just people. They're like every other Christian, okay, as far as they enjoy their children, they enjoy home and hearth and health. They all want these things. When they hear a joke about whatever is part of their culture that they can poke fun at, and a laugh is a laugh, and a sob is a sob in Islam, just like it is anywhere else. And so, you know, somehow, you know, these reptiles behind the scene, Don, have got to do what they can to stir the pot, to get Christians upset at Jews, and everybody upset at Islam. And I really believe that's the agenda. Again, it goes back to the so-called protocols of the, which was, of course, a very, very accurate game plan, a blueprint for the future written in the 1800s. Accurate as all get out as far as predicting the armed conflicts we now know as world wars, and the shaping up of their proposed final world war that would just basically bring the world into such an utter destruction and hopelessness that the human mind will just accept any exit from that horror. And that's, you know, the Antichrist religious new order. And that's the agenda. That's the way I see it. So when you look at it from that macro worldview, Don, you're stepping outside the box of the propaganda of the mainstream news media, and you're suddenly realizing that every news story starts to make sense.
Yes. Now, the aspect of communing with nature or communing with the Creator is a process of using the heart. I'm sure you would agree with that. That it's not.
Oh, yes.
It's not one of the mind. In fact, the mind is. It's a kind of an elusive aspect of who we are, because most people think their mind is their brain. The brain is nothing more than a tool in the toolbox. And I think mind is the exercising of the brain with the carpenter's will or the carpenter's intent in action. And if you feed the mind or the brain with limiting thoughts, then the mind is going to be limited. This is how you take over a country without firing a shot. You create belief systems, and you keep hammering those belief systems both subconsciously and consciously upon the populace. And people just accept those as reality. They're not offered any other alternative, but then again, they're waiting for someone else to tell them what to do. It's sort of a laziness and an apathy that becomes its own worst enemy, because it permits this abuse to take place. On a past show, I talked about what are six virtues of the heart: appreciation and forgiveness, humility, understanding, compassion, and valor. And any one of those six, or any combination of those six qualities in working in tandem with each other, creates a powerful being. In fact, if you look at the universe as, let's say it's a mirror, and you want to project onto the mirror your will or your intention or even your imagination, you've got to have a clear picture of how you see the way you would like things to be. And we're talking about each individual, first of all. How would they like their life to be? Now, when you understand that you can communicate with the universe through the heart, all you have to do is set your intention upon that mirror. Cause it to reflect what your intention is, what that vision is, what that imagination is, what that desire of the heart is. And the universe will respond. Now, if those that control this draconian system know that as a reality, all we have to do is look at the methods that they use to do the same thing. They're projecting fear onto the mirror, and so the mirror reflects back fear, and the fear magnifies. They project ignorance, and we get ignorance, and they project apathy, and they use drugs to do this, and they use propaganda and indoctrination in the schools. We're not educating our children. We're indoctrinating them in belief systems which have nothing to do with the truth. They have absolutely nothing to do with the truth, because those truths, and I'm speaking of much higher truths than any that anyone has ever contemplated on this planet. Because to think of the magnificence of the creation and how expansive the universe alone is would boggle anyone's mind. You would think we would be striving to know that instead of getting wrapped up in all this trivial, nonsensical idiocy that we call everyday life. I sound like I'm speaking very harshly, but I don't know how else to put it. You're free to comment if you like.
Well, yeah, we've had this discussion quite regularly, I believe, Don. Yeah, it's it just goes back to what the covert agenda is. And again, I just need to mention once again the protocols of the wise men in Zion and the final religious war, pitting the, you know, any professed followers of Christ with that of Muhammad. And so, yeah, when you look at what's happening, the false flag event to frame these Muslim extremists,
close. Freudian slip.
Freudian slip. But it's not that group that's responsible. And yet, what's funny to me, Don, in that same context, is you don't really see too many of the religious imams or imams, whatever you want to call them.
Imams.
Imam, Ewoks from planet whatever. They aren't coming out as a body and, you know, sharing with their group the obvious false flag insider story of the events of 9/11. For instance, it doesn't take any imam or anybody with half a brain to figure out what really happened at the Pentagon was not the official story. There's no way a large airliner flew into that building. It beggars logic to even think somebody could believe that for a second. So, you know, you don't have any, with the exception of Ahmadinejad, you know, who just came out and declared it all to be an inside job. But he's not a religious figure. He's a political figure, okay? You don't have these religious leaders saying, we're not a violent people. We're not responsible for this. Look at Israel, not us. you know, at least if they are saying that, Don, it's surely not being broadcast on the nightly news.
Well, here's a perfect example. If you replace the individual who is really a soul, okay, you replace the individual with the name UN, United Nations. They don't show appreciation. They don't show forgiveness. They don't demonstrate humility or understanding or compassion nor valor. Mm-hmm. They're not operating from the heart. So why would we kneel down to such an organization? It's the official international governmental stamp for organized crime is all it is. That's all it is. You take any one of the governments and they're organized crime. What else can the UN be but a collection, a society of organized criminals, giving themselves a title, United Nations? They're nothing further from the truth. You know, they're not united in any way, other than scheming and trying to control everything else. So there is the answer to anyone that looks to the United Nations as being the answer to the world's problems. Look the other way. Look into your heart and commune with God. Whoever your God is, commune with God and extol the virtues of the heart. And quit worrying about what the media is saying, because the media is lying. What the media puts out is propaganda. We all say this over and over, don't we? We're getting propaganda, and people are trying to find the truth somewhere in the propaganda. You're not going to find it there. It's by intention. It's omitted. We wouldn't have the world's problems if they knew what they were doing. If what they tell us they're doing and what they're doing were the same thing, we would not have the world's problems. But they tell us the opposite. They tell us what they think we want to hear, and they tell us this is what you want to hear before they say it, as if somehow that makes it true. You know, the times are really becoming more insane. And I have to tell you, you know, when one goes into meditative or prayerful thought for a few days and jumps back into the arena of this whirlwind of lies and deceit and propaganda and corruption, you notice it right away. You see how it spills out into traffic patterns. You see how people exhibit certain signs of discomfort when they're doing something simple like shopping or taking a vacation. They're not having fun. They're not enjoying their lives at all. They're subsisting. And really, the level at which they're subsisting is quite low. Do you agree with that or?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Right on point.
We look at the world's problems. Is the world's problem abortion? Well, it is a major problem, but they don't intend to do anything about it. I mean, they're trying to robotize the human species right now. So that's the worst of their, or the least of their concerns. The homeless people living in tents out in the woods, or out in the desert in places that are waiting for somebody to reach out a helping hand and pull them out of their misery. There are those that are helping those people, but they're too far and few between. Those that have a means to help other people are busy watching television and being entertained. And they figure, well, I do my share. The government takes care of those people. No, they don't. They're not taking care of anyone but themselves.
Oh, yeah, right on. Yeah, that's, again, the entitlement mentality. And sadly, you know, there's with the vaccine lies, the annual dose of toxins, and, you know, thimerosal, mercury, going into the brain, combined that with the effects of fluoride, in many cases in your drinking water, as, you know, as well as your sodium fluoride toothpaste, it's no wonder that Americans are dumbed down. No wonder.
Mm-hmm. Now, recently, the UN, I don't even know why I'm talking about the UN so much, other than they're trying to make news for themselves. They appointed a Japanese scientist, a woman, or they're about to appoint her as the spokesperson for planet Earth in the and in the event that we are communicated with by visitors from other planets. The UN actually is claiming that they're the ones qualified to do this. All along, they're denying that these people don't exist.
Yeah, it's called hedging your bets on the table. You know, we know, I don't believe you're going to hit that number, but just to make sure, I better put a couple of markers up there just to make sure.
Again, and we don't question. Wait a minute, they're saying flying saucers aren't real. There are no people on other planets. We know in this galaxy there are at least a trillion planets. In this galaxy alone, and there are billions of galaxies. Are you serious? Are you saying that this is the only place that there is life on Earth in this oppressed prison planet society that we live in? It doesn't make sense. It just doesn't compute at all.
And of course, if we are to believe, which I have no doubt to disbelieve, Bill Cooper's allegations and many others as well, that claims that the were these Federation alliances that did in fact contact the world leaders, not least of which was Eisenhower following Truman's very, very questionable presidency. You know, you see the introduction of this Federation because the nuclear genie was let out of the bottle, and it's just not a matter of mutual assured destruction, MAD, and assault treaties. No. If you start exploding nukes to any degree, it's going to negatively affect the universal consciousness to the point of catastrophe.
Mm-hmm.
One giant step backwards, basically, into paganism and barbarianism.
But it's going to impact many, many of those other civilizations on other planets or out in space. And they do not have to tolerate that. You see, that is what being a sovereign is all about. Is saying that's their intention, but we don't have to allow them to destroy us because it's their intention to destroy themselves.
Again, this story goes back eons of time to the earliest history. This is exactly the same conflict and struggles going on then. Atlantis and Lemuria, I'm of the opinion after some deep research that these land masses did exist on planet Earth, most likely from another star system coming in, very much like the human structure. I mean, they appear to be human, but do they have other abilities to take on different forms at the leading time, at the right time? I just go back to that TV series V, where, you know, these beneficial mothership comes in with all these promises of new technology and an idyllic life, you know, on the Federation teat. And in reality, they were hiding their true identities as and the true agenda is basically, you know, eating the human flesh.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of Hollywood movies are so much closer to reality than you'd ever dream, and of course these so-called psyops programs, the dumbing down of America is a very real part of the entire picture.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we have a caller here. Would you like to take a call?
Surely.
Okay, we've got Joe on the line. I'll let Joe further identify himself if he cares to. Welcome to Evident Footprints, Joe. You're calling from where, and your question or comment for Dr. Atruat?
I'm calling from Northern Idaho.
Okay.
And I'm interested in all of the things you have to say tonight. I listened last week when you talked about extraterrestrials. The media I listen to, seeing how they have taken my children away from me because I scream the truth and I don't want vaccines and I don't want their cruddy food. And so they point the finger at me for minimal things and take my children away from me. I literally have made the living. I make it with my hands. I cut the logs and build the house to live in, and I grow the garden and can the foods and dry them and bake cookies and bread so that we can live healthily. And I build the furniture and the stove so that we can live kind of comfortably in our log home, in our little log cabin that isn't good enough for many people. The media I listen to, I've chopped off Dish Network since my kids aren't here screaming they want cartoons. And all the media I listen to is you guys, Alex Jones, R.J. Hender, RBN. I listen to all of this, and I hear low here, low there, low here, low there. I hear my Savior's name called Yahweh, this way, that way. I don't know which way sometimes. I was very interested in listening to your show last week on extraterrestrials. I don't know what's truth except for when I'm begging and pleading to my Lord, and sometimes it just seems to cause tears. You were talking about people who are out in tent cities living.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting to a point that I think we need to have a revolution of a different kind, where we literally beat our swords into plowshares, and that we go back and occupy the land that they have gated us off from. My children were born in Ukraine. I have studied the Ukrainian and Russian constitutions. I speak Russian. Over there where there's a bare piece of land, people plant their gardens on the road right-of-ways, in the railway right-of-ways, in the off places, and what they don't absolutely have to have to feed their families, which they're all very hungry these days, except for those who are more equal than others, the same as here, they take it down to the bazaar or on the street. And they sell their underwear and their silverware and their food, and the police will come and take a little bit of it, even the 50-cent a pack Marlboros that are directed right at young people over there, and protect them from the tax collectors and thugs and mafia. And I come back here and I tell people about the differences in my homeland. I'm born and raised in Idaho. My great-grandfather built the first road into the first Idaho capital in Albion in southern Idaho because we were Mormons. I don't go to that church or any other church. All I hear is low there, low here, low there. And I know that when I tell people that here, they say, we're still born in the most free country in the world. But our birth certificates are used as a bond, and our children and our land is sold over and over and everything that they will ever produce. And the only way that I know how, that I think that I can live, is to literally just take my children and go to those woods and occupy it and take our picks and our shovels and start a different kind of revolution, all of us who are just sick of this, and say enough is enough is enough, because I don't know what to believe. Are the extraterrestrials coming? Is a bomb coming? I have a bomb shelter. I'm finishing it up now. I'm trying to put plenty away for food so that we can live. But I don't know what they're going to come and take that. They have taken so much of my 55 years of what I have made a living with my bare hands that I don't know what to do. And all I do is listen to you guys. I try to call into Dr. Otz. Maybe my phone doesn't have an ID or something, because I don't want called by people who don't like what I say. And so I don't know what to do. I wonder if this is a good idea, that maybe it isn't so bad to live out in a tent in the woods, that maybe that's what we need to do and take our old folks out of old folks' homes and start calling them elders and listen to them as such, and take our children out of this indoctrination center where they poison them and feed them full of crap saying that this is all okay. I just don't know, and I feel like I'm totally alone. Because I hear one message from you guys and another message from you guys over here, and I hear each other bad-mouthing each other. I don't know which one's the Red Army or the White Army. All I want to do is follow my Lord and do what I'm supposed to do, and it seems like it's nowhere on this earth that really we're just completely alone with our Creator. And hopefully our children and our families, we should be gathering them together instead of scattering out like the house of Israel.
Yeah.
Do you have suggestions? Where do you listen other than when you're on your knees or all day long when you're asking?
Well, Joe, that's the ultimate authority right there. And just like Don said earlier, you got to go and meditate and find your own path. And that's what you've got to hold on to. The, you know, my guest tonight, that's what she's espousing. Her book, the Knowledge of Good and Evil, is exactly what it's designed to be, a roadmap through this pit of vipers and landmines. I have not read the book other than the reviews and talked to people that have read it. And it makes all the sense in the world as to, you can first to follow the bloodlines, those that set up disinformation agents in the alternative media. And Don knows this. You know, just follow the source. Who talks about the Zionist? Who talks about the groups that are really funding the world behind the scenes?
The Antichrist, aren't they? The Antichrist,
you know,
is already here. The bottomless pit is spewing all over us. The signs
they,
in the heavens
are
here.
They are designed to be disinformation agents to create the dissent and the confusion that you just explained so very well. So you just have to, again, have a basic understanding of historical fact. You have to have a basis in scriptural knowledge, and you just basically have to have a spirituality.
I have decided to come out of the beast and not accept her plagues. And I have called lawyers in the courtroom, nothing but the trinketry between the whore and the beast. And I have screamed in district court and told them they could shoot me dead if I wanted 100 good fathers while I scream at the State House steps to the Attorney General's office. And they're going to throw me in a cage for doing all of this. And I don't have enough money to buy the book. And I don't want to do it. So I just listen to the Spirit. And right now the Spirit is telling me to get out of Babylon, to come out of the beast, and go back and occupy the land. And just say enough is enough is enough.
And you know, Joe, everything you are saying, I'm sure, is touching the hearts of the listeners. They may not have experienced what you have experienced, but I can tell you that you and those like you are the reason that I do the research that I do. So we can identify who the beast is. so we can identify the methods that the beast uses. And you see that there seems to be less and less, or it appears that there's less and less for us to hold on to. But then again, you have to ask yourself, what is it that we really require to exist? We were given life by the creator of the universe. There is no higher honor that could be bestowed on any one of us than to be given the gift of life and to be allowed to experience life and to bring that back into the creation as a means of expanding the creation. God didn't have to give us life to do that, but he saw the wisdom in fragmenting himself or individuating himself into others that had their own identity and are of the same spiritual essence. God hasn't left us. God is within us, and all of the power of God is available to us if we seek it.
So, and that doesn't matter how much of a wretched man we are, as I think Nephi in the Book of Mormon said, what a wretched man I am. It seems like I have so much to get over myself before I can even figure out who's right when I'm listening to them.
Well, who tells us that we're wretched, ultimately? Isn't it the preachers
that
make millions of dollars
world.
And buy themselves mansions and multiple jet airplanes and you know, we could spend a lot of time talking about all of their issues, but we don't need a middleman. We never needed a middleman to be in touch with the Creator. You can do it through your heart. And I gave a very simple formula for doing that. Picture the universe as a gigantic mirror. And you, when you pray, when you talk to God, project your thoughts, your images, your heart's desires onto that mirror, and it will be reflected
back. I do that all day long, every day, to the point of asking whether I should plant all of these seeds, and if I have beets for seeds next year, and I hear a voice in my head say, go down in the root cellar and save those little beets, and I'm going, there is no little beets, and I run down there, I said, this isn't a joke, I live by this, and here's five little beets, and so I have my beet seeds this year. I do that all the time. I just think that it's time to gather our families and get out of the beast all the way. And I just don't know how to do that and not end up shot dead or to be able to survive it.
Well, keep listening to this show and listen to shows that feed you spiritually. I get a lot of email from people that say that they get quite a bit out of what my guests bring to this show.
I do. I get a lot out of it. I appreciate you guys, both of you. Dr. Ott, I used some of your information on vaccines and stuff and the viral attacks in trials, trying to keep them from vaccinating my children. So I do listen to you guys, and I appreciate you very much, and I'll let you go on with your conversation. I just want to let you know where we are, us who aren't on, have some website that brings in money or something else that props us up. The only thing we have is the Spirit of the Lord, and it's frustrating at times, and they take our children from us. Thank you very much.
Yes, thank you for calling, Joe.
Yeah, good night, Joe. Yeah, see, that's not atypical, okay? That's a lot of the new breed cropping up across America. They're disenfranchised. They're made to feel a real form of depression and hopelessness, Don. And see, that's done by design. Mm-hmm. There's no doubt in my mind that's their victory when they get people to have that hopelessness. And it's a, you know, with all due respect to Joe, it's really is a lack of self-esteem and self-development and spirituality to get that hopelessness. You gotta, like you said so well, we are divine beings. We are not some hopeless, helpless creatures that are worthless. Far from it.
Well, I'm going to pray for Joe, and certainly all the listeners can pray that he just simply looks inward from the heart and communes with God. You notice,
and sometimes, you know, it is darkest just before the dawn as well. And a lot of times when you hit rock bottom is when you find your true strength, and it's a process. It's definitely not a destination, a one day aha. It's a process. It's a journey.
Yes. And it's nice to know that there's someone out there who's listening, who looks to what we have to talk about as being of substance that he can hang his hat on. There's a lot of fear mongering out there. You know, I talk about topics that scare the pants off of people because they don't understand them. But as they begin to understand, they understand others who are out there delivering a similar message or have maybe a completely different message that they never quite understood. Because we're constantly told that things don't exist. What qualifies these incompetent jerks that run the government to tell us such things? They're just lies. They're lies of convenience so that they don't have to answer for their own shortcomings. And that's the essence of tonight's show, I guess.
A good essence, and I think a good show. Well done, Don. I do need to probably call it a night. It's we've gone past the hour, and that's wonderful.
I need to call it a night, too. But I want to thank you, True, for your insights, and thank Joe for his call as well. Keep listening, Joe, and hang in there. People will pray for you. You have our word on that, and things will get better. And, you know, we'll pick up this topic again, I'm sure. If not tomorrow night, in the very near future. Dr. A. Truott, your website is atruott.com and meminerals.com. You have two websites, actually.
Yes, indeed. And thanks for mentioning that. I wish I had more time in the day to keep up on that blog. I got 485 emails today, and many of them were very... You know, many people just like Joe that are just crying out for, you know, some relief. We're limited in, you know, finances. And just in closing, last Thursday, the conference, you know, attendings that were there and so, like, we went out and took time to go and tour the Latter-day Saint Mormon LDS Conference Center, okay?
Mm-hmm.
We pull up... In a road called North Temple Street, which is the between Temple Square and the Conference Center. We get out of the car, and the first thing that we see is a homeless person, a female, who comes up to us and begs for some anything, any scrap. And she is distraught. She's crying, sobbing, saying she has to get out of town immediately. She has to get back to Oregon and needs any money she has. And I had absolutely nothing in my wallet, as luck would have it. But Liz, you know, it's been on my show a number of times,
mm-hmm.
went back in, dug in, found a small bill and gave her something. And as she gave it to her, she was dragged, basically accosted by church security personnel, two of them, and they chewed her out for not doing as ordered, staying at the, you know, place where she was supposed to be, and they just proceeded to take her away. And that's, again, typically what happens in the Mormon kingdom, Don, the week before their general conference. They, you know, one of the favorite places for these homeless vagrants is to, you know, go in different places around the Temple Square and around the conference center, and they're tolerated for the most part, but not during the very busy general conference. So they typically round them up, put them on a bus, and ship them down to typically Las Vegas or some warmer climate. And they let them be in other cities' problem. And this is what we witnessed. And then we walk across the street after this incident into the great, grand, and spacious building. And there we hear a tour guide talk about the incredible wealth that this LDS church has to build this facility and not have a dime of mortgage behind it. You know, $1 billion perhaps. Nobody really knows the true cost because it's all a big secret. And then proceeds to tell how much it cost him to keep it in power, to keep it heated. And the tour guide proudly declared, it's the equivalent of 600 homes. And yet the Mormon people claim to follow the King Benjamin address to always give all and everything to the homeless and those in need of succor. And it's just not happening. You've got homeless. You know, I said under my breath, 600 homes. Well, how many homeless shelters could that money fund completely? So there's no need of these panhandlers. But see, that's just a symptom, Don, of the illness. It's the hypocrisy. It's the Hegelian dialectic. Don't be caught up in reality. Let's look for a false image. Let's look for a false Christ. Let's look for, like Joe said, low here, low there. And people are in an absolute confused, hypnotized daze.
Mm-hmm.
Well, time to wake up.
I'd bet the farm that lady that you were talking about was probably excommunicated from the church at one time or another.
Hard to say, but I think she was the real deal. Not a professional panhandler, but she was just trying to get back to the Pacific Northwest and had no money. Anyway, with that, I'll say good night, Don.
All right. Thank you very much for being on the show, and you have a good night. We'll talk to you next week on Evident Footprints. Folks, that wraps it up. You've been listening to Evident Footprints on BBSRadio.com and tonight's guest, Dr. A. Chu Ott. Special thanks go out to Wind Talkers Radio Network, with whom I had the pleasure of spending 2 hours of interrupted time this early evening, and the jackbooted thugs were really messing with Drew Rain Show. But we continue on. Also at bbsradio.com, I'd like to thank Seth Hendrick on the sound, Don and Doug Newsom for making Evident Footprints possible, our caller Joe in Idaho. And I want to let the listening audience know that starting on the 1st of October, that's this coming Friday, we'll be moving Evident Footprints to Station 2 at BBS Radio. Still bbsradio.com. Just click on Station 2. Same time, same place. To all of you out there, tune in tomorrow night. My special guest will be Dr. Mike Castle. In the meantime, I wish everyone a night filled with peace, love, and light, and have a good night.